Welcome to my talk. I'm going to be talking about a project that we've had going on for 9 years, and I want to give an acknowledgement to Andre Ranavasan, who's going to be giving actually the next talk. Unfortunately, when we got these scheduled, it would have been nice to have them flip-flopped and have the hydrology first and then the nitrogen. But as it is, I'll be speaking about the nitrogen aspects of this project, and then Andre will be talking about some of the hydrology. So the title of my talk is Drainage Water Management to Mitigate Nitrogen Leaching from a Tiled Drained Agricultural Landscape. So this is in a field in Minnesota. So this field was first drained back in 2006. It's a mollisol, very typical to a lot of the soils that we have in the upper Midwest of, say, the states of Iowa, Illinois, Minnesota. Of course, being in Minnesota, it's a little colder and a little wetter at times of the year. Prior to 2005, there was no drainage in this field, so the farmer has managed the field in a cultivated situation since about 1918 without any subsurface drainage. Drainage was installed in 2006 at 1.2 meters deep and a 15-meter spacing. And we have three management zones currently in that field. One is a conventionally drained zone, conventional free drainage. The other one is a controlled drainage, and so we'll be doing most of the comparisons on that today. We also have an undrained zone in that field currently as well. And this farm site also has an undrained perennial prairie that we're also monitoring, not as necessarily part of the data I'm going to present today, but it gives us a nice background in terms of what sort of pre-settlement conditions were like, because this field's basically a virgin prairie that's never been managed with drainage or cultivation. So this is our site in the state of Minnesota. It's in southwestern Minnesota. It's about 2.5 to 3 hours southwest of the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. And the picture on the right is fairly soon after we started this research. The grower was featured in an article in the Corn and Soybean Digest because of some of the research that we were doing on his farm. So some statistical methods that we've got available data. We have daily data. Actually, we have hourly data, but we're using daily data to look at flow-weighted mean nitrate concentrations, nitrate loads between 2006 and 2014. And as you'll see from some of the data, we have had climate impact us. And so in 2011, we actually had some fairly strong drought conditions and no flow was recorded. We've used some nonparametric methods because the data were really strongly not normal. And we're using the Wilcoxon-signed rank test for paired comparisons between the controlled and the free drainage for the daily flow volumes that we had out of the site. I'll speak just a little bit about that, but focus mainly on the flow-weighted mean nitrate concentrations and the nitrate loads that were coming out of the site. Just to give you a little bit of perspective over this period of study, the chart that you're seeing up there on the screen, the blue bars are the monthly precipitation that we've got, and the red area that repeats itself over and over is our long-term mean monthly precipitation. And so you can look at over this period of time, we've had a few extremes. You look at 2010, of course, there was a number of extremes, and then, as I said, 2011, we didn't really have any data to report because essentially once we got past the month of June, the faucet turned off and we really had no more precipitation after that. And if you look at 2012 and 2013, we had some similar types of conditions happening where we may have one or so months during the actual growing season that we actually had a bit of water, but by and large our growing seasons were fairly dry in Minnesota during that period of time. So this is some of the data for the flow-weighted mean nitrate concentrations when we look at that period between 2006 and 2004. The data are continuously collected, and so when we start looking at this, the free drainage is the darker green line that we have up here, and the yellow line is from our controlled drainage zone. And so you see, one of the things that we first notice is that in a lot of the periods in the first couple of years, things were very similar, and then we saw a bit of a divergence where the free drainage flow-weighted concentrations were sometimes, in this case, a bit higher and lasted considerably longer in many of the years as we were looking across these 9 years that we're presenting the data. What's one of the remarkable things that we see is that there's very little flow from our controlled drainage site. Now, this is really driven by precipitation. The way that we have the stop logs or the weir boards set up in these control structures is that the only time flow will occur in those systems is when there's enough water behind that structure to meet that outlet level to flow over. And so we're really dependent on Mother Nature to supply that water. So it ends up being very intermittent, which creates some challenges for analysis when you're trying to look at these things. And so we've started looking at these in longer time periods. When you start looking at 2011 and 2012 into 2013, of course, you see this period of time when we had very little flow. There was no flow from controlled drainage in 11 or 12. We had a very short period of time early in the year in 2012 that we had some drain flow from our conventional drainage system out there. But then 2013, we start seeing a few spikes coming out. And in this case, we see that the controlled drainage flow-weighted mean concentration was considerably higher, and we'll see some annual values that that's also reflected in. And I'll talk a little bit more about that as we get to that slide. When we start looking at the loads, again, this somewhat mimics what we just saw in terms of the flow-weighted mean concentrations, is that there are some intermittent times, and in this case, the dark line is the flow loads that we get from the free drainage. Of course, 2010 was a very wet year, the dashed gray line is the control drainage. Now, when you look at 2010, you do see a bit of a spike here that comes out early in the growing season, which you don't really see in any of the other years. Part of this was because of the fact that when we manage these systems, generally speaking, they get to be managed up to three times a year. So if we look at fall around crop harvest, if the water table tends to be high, we need to drop that water level down to create trafficable conditions so we don't create situations where we get combines and grain carts stuck. We also do that in the spring when we have to necessarily lower the water table if it's high. And in 2010, we actually had to do that. And so there was water that was behind the structures that when we released the water, we got a fairly large load of nitrate coming out because that water had been stored since the previous year behind the control structure. So we did see a flush of nitrogen come out at that time. I'll also say, even though I'm not presenting it in this presentation, we also have dissolved reactive phosphorus and total phosphorus numbers for the system over the same period of time. And Andre and I just have not gotten to working all of that up yet. So when we start looking at some of the statistical analysis over the course of the years, we're looking at there's statistically significant differences in the drain flow, the end loads, and the concentrations among the sites. And we see a 29% reduction in the flow volume between the free and the controlled drainage at this site for that period of time. And then we see a 41% reduction in nitrate load for the controlled drainage compared to the conventional free drainage. This number is complementary to a lot of the other data that we see from across the upper Midwest when we look at other studies that have been reported in the literature. And we see a flow-weighted mean nitrate concentration actually also lower, but that's almost by about 60%. The total number of sampling numbers that we're using for these observations is a 618 over that period of time. When we start focusing in on just maybe looking at a summary of some of this data for the annual nitrate concentrations, the locations during these years that have asterisk worm were statistically significant for differences in annual nitrate concentration when we break that down by year. So 8, 9, and 10, and of course 10 was one of those pretty wet years. 11 and 12, we basically had no data to show, but when we start looking at that concentration in 13 after that dry period, we see a spike in that, and that was also statistically significant compared to the conventional free drainage. And really, as you look at it, it's a flip-flop in terms of what the other data actually show us. We can start really sort of bearing some of that. Well, let me go back to that one because it doesn't really bear it out quite so much. Went the wrong way. So when we start looking at this concentration, when we think about it, and there's work from Minnesota that Giles Randall and others have done, that when we have these dry conditions, we may get residual soil nitrate built up in the profile, even though the crops, were performing fairly well. We did see reductions in nitrate that after we started getting more water come back through, we had a flush of nitrate come out that was above and beyond what we would have seen from our releasing water, say, in the springtime of the year. The annual nitrate loads, we start looking at those years again. We had a couple of years here that were not significant when we actually started comparing the loads. There was a lot of variability here in 2013, even though the concentrations were statistically significant. But basically, this is breaking out for us that in the majority of these years, the free drainage always had higher nitrate loads. Statistically speaking, in I think it was five of the 9 years were statistically higher compared to the control drainage. When we start looking at the trend analyses for the statistical differences, we see that there was differences between control drainage and free drainage for concentrations and load. We know that that seasonal variation in precipitation is strongly contributing to the monthly and the annual observances of the data that I've shared so far. Control drainage resulted in statistically lower annual nitrate loads in 5 out of the 7 years where we actually had flow from the drainage system, from both systems. And that annual nitrate concentration was significantly greater for the free drainage than the control drainage following those 2 years of the seasonal drought that we had. And with that, I will acknowledge my cooperator who's put up with me for the last 11 years of going out and mucking around on this field, and all of the other people who have really helped, and without their help would not have made this research possible. And then, of course, our funding agencies. We've been very successful, at least funded over the last few years. So, do I have time for a question, Axel?
Yes, we have time for a question.
Okay.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks, Axel. Yes, sir. Yeah, so the question about yield. So one of the things that we talk about with this type of a practice is that we don't sell it really hard as a win-win necessarily for crop yield and water quality. We've seen a benefit in water quality nearly every single year. From a crop production standpoint, we've only seen a bump in yield 2 out of the last 10 years that we've been doing it that was significant. And part of that is just because of the nature of if we can store water and we have extra water there during the growing season, we do see a little bit of a bump, but we're so dependent on Mother Nature. If we don't get good recharge in the fall, we don't end up seeing a yield benefit. So the yield benefit part of this type of a practice has been it's not made the farmer quite as happy as he was hoping he was going to be with yield advantages. We'll just put it that way. Yeah, Dan.
How did you control your boar?
So the way that we control them, generally, we don't do any control in the fall because generally it's been dry enough, except in 2010 when we had a wet year. So then we dropped the boards down and allowed some water to release. But we only do it for a very short period of time. So when he goes in and harvests, it's maybe 7 to 10 days ahead of the harvest, and then we put them back up right away to try to retain water. When we initially started this in 06, 07, 08, and then particularly in 2010, we would manage the boards every spring, even if there wasn't a lot of water behind them. But as we've gotten accustomed to managing the systems, there's almost a year now that we go that we don't even go in and manage them because the water level, we feel comfortable that it's been low enough that we're not going to impact anything. So we haven't let any water out for the last 4 years at all in the spring. So.
Okay, thank you,
Jeff. Thank you, Ash.